Today's episode is sponsored by Morgan Stanley. Quality education and making it affordable and accessible could hold the key to breaking the poverty cycle. See how the winner of the 2017 Kellogg Morgan Stanley Sustainable Investing Challenge seeks to help more children from low-income families stay in school at morganstanley.com/eduindia. Morgan Stanley & Co., LLC, and Morgan Stanley Smith Barney, LLC, members SIPC.
Opening bell in about 20 seconds. Let me just set the stage for you.
Money, money. I want more money.
You cannot have it all.
This whole system is too confusing.
Hi, I'm Ben White, and this is Politico Money. Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Politico Money, your one-stop shop for understanding all the weird stuff going on right now at the intersection of Wall Street and Washington. This week, we're focused once again on trade. This time, President Trump's plans to slap $60 billion worth of tariffs on imported Chinese goods. We're expecting an announcement as soon as Friday from the White House, but as with everything else in this administration, there's an ongoing internal fight over the exact nature of the tariffs, and the timing could always slip. But this is another one where President Trump is very eager to make an announcement on Chinese tariffs, so expect it to come soon. One question is whether the tariffs will go into effect right away or be subject to a comment period. If there is a comment period, Beijing could have an opportunity to try to negotiate some other solution. And there's one school of thought that says that's what the Trump administration is trying to do, rattle the tariff saber a little bit and try to get some concessions from China. But we just don't know. They could put them into effect almost immediately, and there could be an immediate Chinese reaction to that. The politics here are pretty clear. Trump wants to make good on a campaign pledge to get tough with China and protect U.S. manufacturers and U.S. intellectual property. But the economics, well, they are super complicated, as ever. Could this be the first step in a trade war with China that could damage U.S. consumers and U.S. exporters, particularly farmers, but also automakers and plane manufacturers and a whole bunch of other industries who sell stuff into China? Or is it justified punishment for Chinese trade cheating? Well, we're going to try to get to the bottom of a lot of this and explain it to you as best we can. First up, we talk to the aptly named David Dollar. He's a China trade expert at Brookings, and he urges caution. And then we talk to AFL-CIO economist Celeste Drake, who thinks Trump is doing exactly the right thing. Okay, we're joined by David Dollar. He's a senior fellow in the John L. Thornton China Center at Brookings. From 2009 to 2013, he was the U.S. Treasury's economic and financial emissary to China based in Beijing. So a great expert in this topic of China and tariffs. And thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, very happy to talk to you.
Let's set the table a little bit. Tell us from the 30,000 foot level, Trump says we're getting beaten badly by China on trade.
We lost $800 billion a year on trade. And of course, the biggest problem is China. We lost $500 billion. How previous presidents allowed that to happen is disgraceful.
That they're cheating at every possible turn and that we need to get much tougher than we are. Is he right? Is this the right time to be doing something tough on China?
I think there's broad agreement in the United States that China has some unfair trade practices, and there's a general desire to get tougher with China. I think the argument that we're losing out to China, that they're cheating everywhere, I think that's overblown. The administration focuses a lot on the imbalance in the relationship, and that's not really a very useful metric. I think the real issues are some specific market access issues. In automobiles, for example, they have a 25% tariff. And if U.S. companies want to produce there, they have to do it with a Chinese partner and transfer technology. So there are lots of examples of specific practices that are offensive to us. But I think this China cheats at everything, that argument's overblown.
Yeah. And let's just play sort of worst case scenario for a moment. And let's say that the Trump administration comes out with, say, $60 billion in tariffs. China responds in kind with something along the same lines, a reciprocal move, and that angers the president. And he takes another step up and takes another action. What would a trade war between China and the United States look like? And what would the ramifications be for not just our economy, but the global economy?
Right. So I do think that kind of escalation is unlikely. You know, I think it's unlikely because the ramifications would be very negative. the kind of things that have been discussed so far are unfortunate, but they're not going to have that big an effect on the U.S. economy or the Chinese economy. The kind of escalation you're talking about, that would start to have a significant measurable effect. You know, the U.S. is a major exporting country. Even though we have this deficit, we are a major exporting country. So what you would find in a serious trade war is much reduced demand, say, for U.S. agricultural products. So farm prices would fall, maybe even collapse, and that's a problem for the farm sector. You'd find some high-tech manufacturing like aircraft. You know, much of the aircraft market is outside of the U.S. For a lot of high-tech manufacturing, much of their market is outside of the U.S. So you would definitely, you know, you could definitely see the economy going into recession if the trade war were serious enough.
What does China buy from us the most? Which industries in the U.S. would be hurt the most by a reduced ability to sell into China? Is it agricultural products, or is it intellectual property and Hollywood movies and that sort of thing? What do we really sell to China?
What's interesting is, of course, we're frustrating. We feel like we could sell a lot more, you know, but it's a major export market. It's surprisingly diverse, you know, so the aircraft, you know, that's one of our famous exports to China. Also, you know, motor vehicle parts, not so much as whole cars, but definitely motor vehicle parts and some whole cars like the BMWs you see in China. They mostly come from Tennessee. So you could call all of that high tech manufacturing. But then it's our largest market for agricultural products. You know, soybeans is the kind of poster child for our agricultural exports to China, but there are a lot of other ones. But then I like to remind people there are 400,000 Chinese students in the U.S., and that's a kind of export. Many of them are paying full ride. A lot of our universities, public universities, they've raised their non-state tuition to pretty high levels. So when Chinese students come in, whether it's public or private, they pay the full ride. They're basically subsidizing our very, very high-quality education system. So it's really a diverse range. You mentioned Hollywood, that, you know, as these movies come out, you know, apparently Black Panther's doing really well in China. The royalties that go to the creation of this kind of art, you know, they're obviously inflated when they can get into the Chinese market. So it is quite a few different industries in the U.S. that benefit from the relationship.
Yeah, and it's fair to say, I mean, you mentioned Tennessee and the BMW plants there that are sold in China, and then agricultural states. Obviously, a lot of those are Trump country and Trump states. It seems to me that if we were to get into this back and forth with China, trade war with China, there would be a significant amount of Trump's own base that would be damaged by that. Am I correct in that?
Yes, and I think you hear that most clearly from farmers and the representatives in Congress who come from farm states or farm areas. You know, they're very worried. Their constituents are going to get hurt. I mean, you know, one of the problems of this kind of trade conflict is a lot of these production relationships have been built up over a long time. And we've planted a lot of land for soybeans because of that Chinese demand. So if suddenly you end that trading relationship, there's going to be a huge amount of land under soybeans that's not economic. Now, it'll gradually change. You know, I don't think we should pretend this is the end of the world, but there'll be a lot of costs as, you know, farmers lose income, some go bankrupt, aircraft, other high-tech manufacturing has to pull back. I mean, frankly, we're almost certainly going to see some closure of American universities. You know, if we really turn inward, it's going to have a big effect on production. And then, you know, to be honest, resources will flow into other things. You know, we'll stop importing a lot of appliances from China, so there might be some return of appliance manufacturing in the U.S. It's often put in terms of net job creation or net job loss. I think it's better to think of it as it would probably eliminate a lot of jobs in sectors you and I just discussed. It'll end up creating some jobs in areas where we used to import. So it's not so much a net change as we would be losing what are, in general, better paying, higher productivity jobs, creating lower productivity jobs. That's the effect of trade protection.
Right. And the other thing that Trump mentioned recently was a tweet in which he demanded that the Chinese reduce their trade surplus with the U.S. by $1 billion, which immediately struck a lot of people as, well, that's not a lot of money when you think about the size of trade between China and the U.S. and the size of the trade deficit. The White House subsequently revised that to $100 billion. But again, they didn't offer any specifics on how they'd like to see China do that, whether it means buy more of our soybeans, more of our products, or export less to us. What did you make of that? And is that something you think China could and would do?
So I think the trade balance is not a good metric for the relationship. You know, the trade balance is largely a macroeconomic variable. In the case of the United States, we don't save enough. And as a result, we run a trade deficit. You know, China used to run a big trade surplus, but actually China's overall surplus has come down very dramatically. That seems to be missing from the dialogue. Their surplus is about 1.5% of GDP, which is really not a big deal. They run a surplus with the U.S., but they want to run a deficit with many other countries in the world because China's natural resource poor. So their overall stance is pretty balanced. I think we're the ones with the problem that we're not saving enough. And the big tax cut that we put in place this year, that's going to reduce our savings further. And it's almost inevitable that our trade, overall trade deficit is going to get bigger. So one thing to keep an eye on is we're probably going to have larger and larger trade deficits. And then we're going to be pummeling China. You know, whereas I said, there are a lot of unfair trade practices, but beating them up over the imbalance, I think that's really the wrong metric.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth going back into that because Trump's entire worldview on trade is that if we have a trade deficit with someone, it means we're getting beaten and taken advantage of. And he seems to want the U.S. to have trade surpluses with everyone. That's obviously not going to happen, as you say, is a reflection of macroeconomic factors, not necessarily bilateral trading arrangements with other countries. Tell us a little bit about what Trump fundamentally gets wrong about the nature of trade deficits and why it doesn't necessarily mean you're losing to someone if you have a trade deficit with
right.
them.
I think it's an old mercantilist point of view, as we call it in economics, thinking that the only real benefit is trade is that you get to export. You know, you get access to a bigger market. And most economists would say, well, that's only half the story. A lot of the benefit of trade is imports. You know, we import all these electronic products from China, smartphones, smart TVs, still lots of garments and footwear. Without the imports from China, many of our products, consumer products, would be much more expensive than they are. So a lot of the benefit of dealing with China is we get things at low prices. That makes people's real living standard higher. And then we also get to export. So we export aircraft, soybeans, the 400,000 college students in the U.S. That's a kind of export that most of them are paying full ride in American universities. So we get to expand things that we're very good at, which tend to be the more high-tech things. And we get to import relatively inexpensive products. That's good for consumers. And just focusing on the one side of that is you know, really one-sided.
Yeah. I mean, isn't it generally true that our trade deficit declines in times of, you know, economic slowdown when people don't have as much money to spend? They're not buying as many products that might have been produced overseas. And when the economy is doing well, our trade deficit naturally increases some because we've got money in our pockets and we're spending on things.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So the kind of cynical view would be if you really want to bring down the trade deficit quickly, then we need a recession, right? Of course, we don't want that.
Interesting. So you obviously got to know the Chinese fairly well. You spent years in Beijing working with Chinese officials. I imagine you still have contacts there. What is your take on how the Chinese view President Trump? Do they think that he really wants a cataclysmic confrontation with China and wants this back and forth kind of trade war? Do they view it as bluster? What does China make of
Donald Trump?
So I
think when he was first elected, there was actually quite a bit of enthusiasm in China. This definitely heard from a lot of officials that this is a businessman. He doesn't seem to be concerned with human rights issues that have been sometimes a problem in U.S.-China relations. They had a sense that they could make a deal with this guy. I think over time they've become more concerned. You know, they put a big effort into these different dialogues that the U.S. and China have had, and you know, as I said, the outcomes are not always that great, but the Chinese like the, you know, steady dialogue, have a discussion, and they're gradually making changes. So Trump worries them. You know, they don't see much of the interest on the U.S. side in continuing the dialogues. I think they're worried as he comes out of this 301 investigation, an interesting question is, do they just announce a decision or do they give the Chinese a chance to negotiate? Chinese are hoping they get a chance to negotiate. They're certainly willing to send delegations to the U.S. to buy more stuff. That's their traditional response. You know, we'll send some delegations to the Midwest. Tell us what are the sensitive states. We'll go there and we'll buy some products. You know, I'm kind of cynical about that kind of buying mission because that doesn't really change the fundamental relationship. Oftentimes that just accelerates purchases that were going to happen anyway. But they're certainly hoping they can continue to deal, but they're worried that they may get slapped with something really quite significant and they feel they would have to retaliate. And, you know, they're very aware of the dangers of going down the road of a real trade war.
Yeah. And do you think, I imagine Xi Jinping and other Chinese officials are aware of Trump's desire for tweetable deliverables, things he can say that he got from the Chinese side. And, you know, you bring up the idea of these delegations to come and buy things in the industrial Midwest or wherever else. Do you think that ultimately that's how some of this winds up, that we perhaps play some of these tariffs and then the Chinese respond with things that Trump can tweet about as victories and then we all move about our lives? Is that how you see this going?
Well, that's certainly one possibility. When Trump went to Beijing, you know, they announced $250 billion in deals, and a lot of us were skeptical that many of those were just vague promises or things that were in the works already. But, you know, they definitely got a lot of tweetable publicity out of that. But clearly Trump hasn't been satisfied with that, so the issue continues on. What I worry about is when we get to the end of the year, we're almost certainly going to find that the U.S. trade deficit has gone up because it's mostly a macro phenomenon. And if you cut taxes and stimulate the economy when unemployment is already low, some of the benefits of that tax cut are going to spill over to our partners, and we're stimulating the Chinese economy, and we're going to be importing more. It's very hard to prevent that. So I just can't see that we get to the end of the year and have anything other than a bigger overall trade deficit. And then China's such an important partner, probably we have a bigger deficit with China. So you can go ahead and tweet individual victories, but I'm sure there'll be a lot of commentary looking at the bottom line saying, well, if that's the metric, then you failed.
Yeah, that's kind of a scary scenario to me. We get to the end of the year and all of a sudden see this bigger Chinese trade deficit or trade surplus with the U.S. and how President Trump responds to that. I guess we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. But David Dollar, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. We will be back in touch with you as this plays out.
Okay, great to talk to you.
We'll be right back with more China trade talk. But first, a word from our sponsor.
A message from Morgan Stanley. Quality education and making it affordable and accessible could hold the key to breaking the poverty cycle. EduIndia, the winner of the 2017 Kellogg Morgan Stanley Sustainable Investing Challenge, designed an investment vehicle to expand access to high-quality, low-fee private schools in India in a way that they hope will achieve the holy grail of sustainable investing, market competitive returns to entice private investors. Learn more at morganstanley.com/eduindia. Morgan Stanley & Co., LLC, and Morgan Stanley Smith Barney, LLC, members SIPC.
All right, we're joined by Celeste Drake. She's Trade and Globalization Policy Specialist at the AFL-CIO. Celeste, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to talk to us.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, so we're expecting the White House and President Trump in the next few days to announce perhaps up to $60 billion in tariffs on Chinese goods coming into the United States. I wonder if you think that's a good idea and whether it won't end up just as a tax on U.S. consumers.
Well, we think that trade enforcement is always a good idea. If you're going to have rules to try to establish a level playing field on trade, then they're not useful at all if you don't enforce them. And the problem with China as a player in international trade is it's been out of compliance with its trade obligations virtually since it joined the WTO. And in particular, the issue of intellectual property theft and related issues surrounding counterfeit goods, forced technology transfer, unlicensed use of software, all of these things actually diminish what companies who operate in the U.S. and their employees can make and make them less financially viable. So when, you know, encouragement and diplomacy and consultations to get those practices to change don't work, you've got to use the remaining tools in the toolbox, which include tariffs.
Okay. And what do you think the Chinese reaction to that is going to be? And how might that impact American workers, particularly if they respond with tariffs of their own and it's harder for us to export stuff made in the United States? And won't it wind up costing consumers more, particularly those who can't necessarily afford to pay higher prices if the Chinese, respond in kind to our tariffs?
Tariffs are not an end goal in themselves. They're a tool to try and achieve more fair and balanced trade and a level playing field. And in the end, even if, you know, tariffs are imposed by one side or both sides for a short period of time, if they're used as a tool to establish that all sides will follow the rules and not engage in intellectual property theft, then we're all winners. Because in the end, there are American consumers who may see, you know, slight increases in products as a lose, but they're already losing from the unfair trade. They're already losing from the fact that their employers are having their products essentially stolen through intellectual property theft. So the idea is to get to a place where very soon all American workers are in a better position, all American consumers are in better position, and quite frankly, all of our trading partners globally. This really isn't just a bilateral issue. It has to do with the global marketplace. And no one country can be allowed to have its practices so far away from what the other countries are doing.
So I was looking at your piece that you wrote after the steel and aluminum tariffs were announced, and it was included a number of enjoyable GIFs. So thank you for that dramatic interpretation. But you basically made the argument that when people say this is going to lead to a trade war, it's Wall Street alarmism, that we're not going to get into a trade war. Talk to me about that. What do you think when people say, okay, we're slapping these tariffs on China, we just did steel and aluminum tariffs, here comes a trade war?
Well, first of all, we have to distinguish trade enforcement from a trade war. And if you're never allowed to use tariffs, then what you're essentially saying is we don't have rules, we have guidelines, and it's perfectly acceptable to allow other parties to cheat and to do so in a way that, in the case of the steel and aluminum tariffs, harms U.S. national and economic security. So I think we've been in a position where for many, many years, Wall Street has really profited off of the unscrupulous practices of other countries and particular companies. So when these companies close U.S. factories or other workplaces and operate offshore, outsourcing the services or the production, whether it's a call center, whether it's a steel mill, whether it's a textile mill or a computer manufacturing plant, and they benefit from abuse of labor rights or intellectual property theft or subsidies from the Chinese government or, you know, targeted overcapacity that's designed to drive American businesses out of business. Wall Street, if they're invested in these companies, is making a killing off of all this, even though it's hurting U.S. working families and the U.S. economy. So I think they've gotten so used to profiting off of the status quo that it really is sort of this alarmism, this chicken littleism, throwing a tantrum to say, I'm so shocked, I'm not getting my way. And so, you know, what we say is the real war here isn't really a trade war. It's a war of a predatory type of capitalism that's been waged on working people, not just in the U.S., but globally. And that's got to stop. Folks can't really get scared to say, oh, you know, oh my gosh, if we actually try to enforce our laws, it could have negative consequences, because in the end, the laws are there for a reason, and we've got to want to enforce them and really trust that in the end, it's going to be better because it's going to create additional jobs. It's going to create more pressure to raise wages because we're going to have fuller employment. And all of those things are good for American families.
Okay, so talk to me a little bit about the potential positive consequences. How are the lives of steel and aluminum workers going to get better based on the tariffs that the Trump administration announced?
Well, we've already seen announcements by steel companies that they are going to start up production lines that have been closed down and rehire workers who had been laid off. And that's already to the tune of about 2,500 workers that have been called back and are expecting to receive callbacks already. And when you're getting workers who had been idle back in the workplace, you're generating economic activity, not just for those workers, but for the goods and services that they buy in their community. You're benefiting the local governments because they're seeing that increased economic activity, and they're able perhaps to make sure that they're providing the services to the public that are needed in their community, whether it's filling potholes, keeping the library open longer, or making sure that they have enough public safety officers on the job. So that's the kind of thing that we're expecting. And really, the steel and aluminum sector, those tariffs, it's such a small part of the U.S. overall economy that even if you were to believe the Chicken Little of the negativity, it's not large enough to have these sky is falling effects that what we're hearing.
Celeste, does it feel weird at all for the AFL-CIO to be so aligned with the Trump administration on this and President Trump on this? I imagine there's most other areas where you disagree with the president. How does it kind of feel to be arguing in favor of Donald Trump's policies?
Well, there are many areas in which we do disagree with the president. Here, we say really the president has come to our position because the AFL-CIO has been advocating for stronger trade enforcement for, you know, as long as it's been around, and certainly for as long as I've been here. We have been asking for stronger, swifter, more certain trade enforcement, fairer trade agreements that have a comprehensive set of rules that put working people and working families first. And here, we can say, here's a president who has done what we've been asking for. So it's not really about party or personality even. It's about what's a good policy for working people. So if it's a good policy for working people, we'll applaud it, and we're happy to do so. And we'll also give tips for continuing to make it better. And that's really what we're doing when we're saying that the administration ought to work multilaterally to get at these issues of steel overcapacity, aluminum overcapacity, and intellectual property theft, as well as reforming NAFTA.
Very good. Celeste Drake of the AFL-CIO, thank you so much for joining Politico Money.
You're welcome. Happy to be here.
All right. Well, that's it for the latest edition of the Politico Money podcast. A huge thanks to David Dollar and Celeste Drake for their thoughts on the upcoming tariffs on Chinese goods. What do we make of all this? Well, it's hard to draw a final conclusion until we see exactly what it is that the Trump administration does. Do they give China some time to respond and to offer concessions? If so, a trade war will probably be avoided, and you could make the argument that this is a good move by the Trump White House to try to force the issue in some areas that the Chinese really are doing damage to the United States in stealing intellectual property, enforcing technology transfers, and maybe they'll open up their markets a little bit more to our goods and services. That would certainly be a good outcome. But as Dollar pointed out, there are big risks to getting into a trade war with China if, in fact, we do that. One of the biggest ones that jumped out to me is the impact on U.S. soybean farmers and the huge amounts of land that would be no longer economically valuable if we no longer have a good trading relationship with China and farmers can't sell their soybeans into China. There's obviously a lot of other industries that want to export to the Chinese and would suffer badly in a trade war with China. So Celeste's points are well taken that it's worth protecting steel and aluminum jobs in the U.S. and trying to go after China on unfair trade practices. But I'm pretty unconvinced that on the steel and aluminum front that we won't do more damage to other industries, automakers, beverage companies, and all the rest with the steel and aluminum tariffs. Understandable that the AFL-CIO would want to be protecting as many workers as they can, but it seems to me that the outcome of those tariffs is not likely to be beneficial to the U.S. economy. So we'll be keeping our eyes peeled very carefully for the Trump administration announcement expected this week, and we'll be back here to explain more of it to you once it happens. I'd like to thank my producers, Bridget Mulcahy and Micaela Rodriguez, and our executive producer, Dave Shaw, as always, for their help with the Politico Money podcast. And if you're liking the show, please do subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. Rate us and write a written review. Love getting your feedback and incorporating it into the show. And we'll be back with you next week.